couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies Monster Hunter, Fatale, The Pale Door, and The Creepshow Holiday Special. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and an interview with Deon Taylor, director of Fatale, as well as the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Tenet. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is actually a big deal, especially considering what's coming up next week and next year, is Roku has finally struck a deal with HBO Max to put their app on their devices. Up until now, HBO Max has not been allowed to install the app on Roku boxes. Recently, they were able to get a workaround with Amazon Fire Sticks. But with Wonder Woman 1984 coming out next week on Christmas Day, and then the entire Warner Brothers slate going to HBO Max in 2021, the need for an app on Roku is a big deal, because right now Warner Brothers is really pushing the HBO Max app because they want the service. They're offering like a 20% discount if you buy 6 months in advance, and it's $15 a month. So, you know, that's a sizable chunk. It's not just the Disney Plus price. It's closer to the Netflix price. So the fact that they have now struck a deal and you can now get the Roku to download the HBO Max app is a big deal, because then that opens it up to what, the 100 million people who've got Rokus in their homes. Or the 100 million Rokus, rather. We've got a couple Rokus in our home, so, you know, I think we get counted twice or three times. And so that's a big deal. So everybody who's got a Roku is excited to watch Wonder Woman next week. Now you can do it. The next piece of news is kind of this interesting little piece. It came out this week that Tom Cruise absolutely lost his caboodles in front of the crew of the new Mission Impossible movie, because this group of crew members were not following the protocols. Now, everyone was wearing a mask, but they weren't socially distanced. I'm assuming they were on a break, or they were just gathering around the back of a grip truck or something like that. And Tom Cruise, who's a producer in the movies, and this is important, he's a producer. He's producing these movies. These are his reputation and everything. And he came on set and he saw this happen, and he absolutely lost his marbles on this and started yelling at him. And, you know, look, you know, I wish somebody had taken some video and gotten audio of this. Oh, wait, no, we live in 2020. Of course somebody took audio of this, because everybody has a cell phone. Here is him losing his mind in a slightly edited clip.
You're back there in Hollywood making movies right now because of us. Because they believe in us and what we're doing! I'm on the phone with every studio at night! Insurance companies! Producers! And they're looking at us and using us to make their movies! We are creating thousands of jobs, I don't ever want to see it again! Ever! And if you don't do it, you're fired! And I see you do it again, you're gone. That's it! You can tell it to the people that are losing their homes, because our industry is shut down. It's not going to put food on their table or pay for their college education. Is it understood? If I see it again, you're gone. And so are you. So you're going to cost him his job. That's it!
And I gotta say, he's not wrong. Tom Cruise was 100% right with all of this. Tom Cruise was also 100% his authority to yell at the crew. I don't care if he used bad language. Oh, wabooohoo. I've been on film sets. I know that that word is tossed around all over the place by the grips and electrics. Don't worry. That's not the first time they heard it. And we need to get past this idea that people who are stars have to be nice to everyone. No, if you're a boss, if you're a producer, you're a producer. I have never been on a movie set and had the producer always be 100% polite and nice to everybody. The producer has to go around and produce sometimes. And sometimes producing is kicking butt. So we need to get past this pearl clutching. Ellen got caught up in all this, Ellen DeGeneres, because people are going, oh, her show was stressful to work on. It's a show. Have you ever worked on a TV show or a movie? They are not easy to do. It's high stress and you get people yelling at you. And Tom Cruise, which is funny if you listen to the clip, you can hear he's yelling through his mask. But he's not wrong. This production was shut down once already because of COVID-related issues, and he's busting his butt to get it to continue to be able to shoot. And these people aren't following protocol. Now, look, I don't care what your stupid Facebook friends say about wearing masks. If you agree to follow the protocols on set, you follow what the protocols say on set. Do whatever you want to in your own time. And if you can find a bar that nobody cares about, then fine, spread it all over the place. But don't spread it on the set. You have to follow the rules of where you work. That's how it works. What's funny about this is this news broke in The Sun, which is a tabloid, and I think their thing was trying to be like, look how crazy Tom Cruise is. They were trying to duplicate the couch jumping incident from whatever that was in 2005. But a lot of people watch this or listen to it, and I listen to it, and I'm like, this guy is not wrong. He is absolutely right. They're trying to keep a production in order and keep people paid and keep a industry at least chugging along to a minor degree throughout this pandemic, and there are people being disrespectful and inconsiderate and negligent, and he has every right to yell at those people. He is their boss. That is fine. I support Tom Cruise 100%, and I know everyone. There's some people like, oh, well, you shouldn't yell at the grips. Yes, you. I've been on sets. You should be yelling at people all the time on film sets. That's how they work. I hate to tell you that. And there might be some days that the production goes really smoothly. But even on the smallest, friendliest set, there's always that one breaking moment where somebody freaks out because it's high tensions, high long hours. Everyone's exhausted. Everybody's tired. And sometimes tensions flare up. And you can't take a 2-minute rant out of context. In context, this makes total sense. Tom Cruise is right on this one. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first film I want to hit is Pinocchio, which opens in theaters next week on December 25th.
I've been thinking to make with my hands by myself a wooden puppet, Pinocchio. Try, say something.
Babbo.
I have a son. My son is born.
He's a puppet like us.
Who are you?
Pinocchio.
I know a certain place called the Field of Miracles. Put him in prison!
How come in prison?
What's interesting about this one is it stars Roberto Benigni as Geppetto. And he had done a Pinocchio movie, what, like 20 years ago? It was after he won the Oscar for Life is Beautiful. And then he did this Pinocchio movie, which he directed. And it was it like won Razzies and everything. It apparently was terrible. I've never seen it. I've not seen this one. It looks like it's this dark, creepy version of Pinocchio, which I guess I could get behind. But I mean, like, do the storybook version, at least. I mean, the Disney version's scary enough with kids turning into donkeys and all that kind of crap. This doesn't have to be made into a Tim Burton movie to work as a dark, creepy tale of a weird proto boy. But that's apparently what they're doing. I don't know. It might be interesting. It's an Italian movie, so it's getting a dubbed release. I don't know how well it's going to do. It's probably going to be forgotten, sort of like that Nutcracker movie about 15 years ago. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Don't Tell a Soul, which opens in theaters on January 15th.
You're going in and I'm keeping watch.
You saw the cash. Cut the tent, break a window. Second floor bedroom, wooden dresser, bottom drawer.
Whoa. Anyone see us?
No, we're good.
Who you had it in you?
Hey, run.
Get back here!
Hello?
Hello?
I'm stuck down here. I cannot get out by myself.
That man is someone else's problem.
Matt, we can't just leave him there.
You stole $12,600. Do you want to get busted?
What's neat about this one is it stars Rainn Wilson as the security guard who falls in this hole after these guys commit a robbery, and he's stuck in there, and one of the kids is guilt-ridden, thinking that he's going to die in the hole. But there's a little more to it. It looks like a neat little suspense thriller, so I'm hoping to be talking about that in a couple weeks because that one actually looks pretty good. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Monster Hunter and The Pale Door.
You're a mean one.
Mr. Grinch, you really are a heel.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the first one that is in theaters. It was supposed to come out next week. Actually, it was, I think, supposed to come out last year or this year, and then it was going to come out later next year, and then it got moved to Christmas, and now it's moved to the 18th this weekend. And that is Monster Hunter. A group of Army Rangers are transported through a dimensional barrier to another world where they have to fight for their lives against giant kaiju-like monsters.
Do you have any idea what those markers are?
They look pretty ancient.
Tracks end here.
It's definitely Bravo team.
They don't just disappear.
Did you see that thing?
Come on!
Fall back!
This is officially above my pay grade.
I don't care what those creatures are. We destroy them and close the gateway.
Yes, ma'am.
This is based on a video game by Capcom. I've never played it. I don't know anything about it, but it's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who has a long history of directing video game movies. Ironically, one of my favorite sci-fi horror movies is done by this guy, has nothing to do with the movie, and that's Event Horizon. If you've not seen Event Horizon, go see it. It is a great movie. But Paul W.S. Anderson is more well known for, in particular, directing the Resident Evil movies. And he also directed the original Mortal Kombat, which I know they're remaking, but he did the original one back in the 90s. He does a lot of video game movies. And one of the problems with video game movies, just as a general rule, they don't work well. And I've said this before. I think I talked about this when Assassin's Creed came out a couple years ago. Video game movies don't do well because when adapting the story, there's not much story to adapt. And I've heard people say, oh, no, this video game has a great backstory. There's a difference between a backstory and a setup and a story. Most video games are open-ended. They maybe have a setup or a backstory for a character, and then the character's thrown into the action, and then it's very open-ended because you have to have choices as the character to go here or there or figure out how to get to, and there's got to be different options. So you can't restrict the story too much as the game goes through the gameplay. And that's very clear when you watch any of these video game movies, from the Resident Evils to Doom to Super Mario Brothers, or even stuff like Assassin's Creed. This movie, though, I think delivers on everything it promises. Mila Jovovich stars in it, and she's Paul W. Sanderson's main squeeze. She, of course, was in all the Resident Evil movies, and she's been other ones that he's directed as well. She plays, you know, the tough Army Ranger captain or leader or whatever. And she ends up teaming up with Tony Jaa when she gets to the other dimension. Tony Jaa's been there for a long time and he's a hunter. And they're trying to close the gateway and fight these monsters. And really, if you watch the trailer, it's just one big giant kaiju monster fight after another, right? Where they're, you know, some giant massive monster with horns and teeth or some sort of giant scorpion spider thing is attacking them and they have to fight it off. And that's what it delivers on. I mean, the effects are pretty good. I mean, at this point, those are canned effects. I mean, everything is very easy to create. You know, you can create these dinosaur looking effects and it's much easier to do now in 2020 than it was in 1993 when they did the original Jurassic Park. But the effects look pretty good and the action's a lot of fun. Not much story there, but that's all it really promises. The movie just promises some kick-butt action, some giant monsters, some screaming and yelling and, you know, running through the desert. If you just want the action and the escape and the big screen spectacle, it's there. And that's the thing. I mean, it doesn't deliver on anything else. There's really no story to it, aside from this woman trying to get back home. There's really no character development to it, because so many of them get killed. And there's almost no dialogue in some scenes because her and the Tony Jaa character don't even speak the same language. So yeah, there is a lot of stuff that goes into a normal movie that's lacking here. But I don't think the movie promises anything but that. And if you know anything about Paul W.S. Anderson or Mila Jovovich's action movies for that matter, you don't expect much from this. And that's why I say it's, you know, for just, you know, a big, explosive, loud action movie fighting monsters in the desert, you get that. You don't get much else, but you get that. And I think that's worth something. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, and that is The Pale Door. This is on Shudder, the streaming service, which is also playing the Creepshow Holiday Special I'll be talking about here in a second. But Shudder is it's a horror-centric and genre-centric streaming service. They got the Joe Bob Briggs does a series on there, and they show a lot of horror movies. They show a lot of foreign horror films. But I mean, there's a lot to do a deep dive, but you have to be a horror fan to like this network. And if you are a horror fan, it's definitely worth checking out. It's like $5 a month. But in The Pale Door, a gang of train robbers in the Old West find themselves trapped in a bordello run by a coven of witches.
Who are you?
My name is Pearl.
She's just an innocent woman.
We ain't gonna sell her anything we do.
If you take me to my home, there would be a handsome reward.
This way, to the brothel.
Gentlemen, please, make yourselves at home.
I understand there was a reward.
Of course. A handsome sum for these handsome men.
Don't be afraid.
This is lower budget, and it has that feel of a made-for-TV movie. It doesn't feel like it's got a ton of money that's being thrown at it, and they do as much as they can with the budget they have, but there's a lot of constraints that you can see throughout the movie. And I'm just starting it off by saying that, in the sense that it doesn't feel like, like a big budget Western movie. It certainly feels like they're working with a limited amount. And I mean, the director clearly is trying to emulate larger productions. There's several shots that are clearly trying to evoke, like the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And, you know, they certainly are trying to work on stuff like High Noon and some of the Clint Eastwood Westerns. I mean, the guy has been influenced, but I don't think he quite has the budget to do it. And at times gets a little bit overly ambitious for the constraints he has. The characters are okay. They kind of fall into the categories of, you know, a gang in the Old West. When the bordello shows up, when the brothel shows up, and they've got these would-be witches going after them and then sort of enchanting them and attacking them, that's when it starts to get really good. And in a certain way, it's trying to become sort of like that scene in Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino's film From Dusk Till Dawn, where they finally realize they're vampires, and then there's this like 20-minute fight scene with vampires. That's probably the best part. In this one, where they've got the witches coming after them in their true form, and they're ugly and deformed, and they're coming out of the grave type look to them. And it's, there's some really creepy shots that are effectively done. It just felt a little stretched thin. But, you know, for sort of like just a throwaway horror movie, you know, if you're a fan of thrillers, if you're a fan of horrors, and you already have Shudder, which if you have Shudder, you've got to be a fan of horror, it's worth checking out. I mean, it's a neat little movie. It's something you can watch this weekend. If you don't like horror movies, and it's neat because it's about witches too. And you don't get too many witches movies. You get a lot of vampires and zombies and werewolf movies. You don't get as many witches movies. And I like the fact that they're diving into that a little bit. So I'm going to say that The Pale Door kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Fatale. And plus, I'm going to interview the director, Dion Taylor. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another new film that's coming to theaters, and that is Fatale. A successful sports agent finds himself in a pickle when a woman he had a one-night stand with in Las Vegas turns out to be the detective investigating his own home invasion.
The detective's here. She's going to be taken over.
I'm certain I know you from somewhere.
I don't think so.
Come on, stay and play.
Look, I have a marriage to protect.
You're afraid I'm going to expose you to your wife?
Yeah.
It wasn't a robbery. Can you think of anyone who might want to harm you? Friends or a woman you screwed?
This is directed by Dion Taylor, who's done a couple of these sort of domestic thrillers. He did The Intruder with Megan Good and Dennis Quaid last year, and he did Black and Blue, which was less of a domestic thriller. But there's sort of this whole little cottage industry, and it does start with, you know, older movies like, you know, Fatal Attraction, or even you go back farther in film history and you can find those. But I'd say like the last 10, 15 years, there've been this, it's focused on the African American market. And you had a whole bunch of them. You had that one Obsession that came out. Idris Elba was in it. It was like 12 or 13 years ago. There was that one, with Regina King and I think, Taraji P. Henson was in one. I mean, Michael Ealy, who was in this movie, is in another movie as was like a good man or something like that. There's a lot of that sort of, and it's always that cautionary tale of who, you know, who you spend time with could come back and bite you. So it does kind of fall into that, a bit of a cliche part where Michael Ealy is playing the guy who is being attacked by Hilary Swank, who's playing the vixen, the femme fatale, if you will. And the performances are fine. I mean, Hilary Swank steals the show in this movie because she's kind of jumps the gamut. She's sexy in some part, which is, you know, she's not normally the sexy person in the movie because that's usually not what she plays, but they play her sexy and then she gets serious and then she can be formidable and mean. And, you know, it's a well-made movie. And it also has some twists and turns that go a little bit outside of the lines, which is good when you're dealing with a formula. You don't want to go something completely off the beaten path, but if it swerves outside of the normal lane and sort of switches up the formula a little bit, I think that's kind of cool. I mean, it's somewhat predictable, but it is that kind of movie that you can watch with your friends and, you know, yell at the screen or kind of get into the jump scares. And, you know, it's not meant to be a heavily deep or anything like that, although there are some meanings you can pull out of it. So I'm going to say that, you know, this movie, it was entertaining enough, and I thought it was different enough from the normal formula that it was, you know, like I said, it did what it needed to do. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I had a chance to sit down with Dion Taylor and talk to him about Fatale and what his thoughts were, not just on this film, but on film in general, about the genre. And here's what he had to say. There's become this genre in the last 10 years or so of stalker cautionary domestic tale. Why do you think those movies tend to be so popular?
I mean, I think they've gotten popular again, but I mean, I think a lot of these films were already popular. You know, when you think of Fatal Attraction was the mothership of that style of film. You know, then you can go further back and you can get into Strangers on a Train. I think these style of films put audiences into the driver's seat. And if you could do them right, they allow for audiences to actually participate in the running of those movies. You know what I mean? I think Fatale is interesting because it kind of is a hybrid of not only that genre, but it also has, you know, a lot of elements of other films as well that's kind of like inside of it. So it becomes like a pulsating thriller, if you will, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it went to places that normally these formulaic, it went outside of that, especially with the whole detective angle and everything.
Yeah, it did. And Fatale is interesting for me because it has a lot of layers of truth to it. The reality of the whole film is, what's the most important thing you have? And the most important thing you have as a man and as a person is your reputation and your name. And I wanted to play with the idea that this guy was right on the cutting edge of being a household name, having a company, having a brand, and all of a sudden someone accuses him of something. We've seen this story multiple times over the last 5-6 years now with social media and network media where someone's already guilty before they've even been convicted of something. Yeah, it's a very, very fun, thrilling film, but it has some very, very good messages that deal with real humanity and real issues that we're going through today as people.
I'm a big horror fan, and
yes.
Do you work a lot with horror or thriller or sort of like the slash, you know, comedy slash horror?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the importance of horror or thrillers when things are normal or in a situation like this, we're sort of kind of going through this national and international disaster with, you know, the way things have been in the last year. What's the importance of having something like horror in the films?
I think these are the hardest movies to make. When you think of guys that do horror extremely well or thrillers extremely well, those are the hardest films to make because you have to actually tap into every emotion for an audience. I'm trying to drive you to a destination and give you characters while I'm doing so. And also, oh, by the way, give you twists, turns, jumps, and bumps. You know what I mean? So the idea for me as a filmmaker is I want to make sure that I put a little bit of medicine inside the candy. Yeah. A little bit of real information where you go, damn, that's deep.
Talk about the theatrical experience, not just for this movie, but for that. That's a big debate now because so much stuff has pivoted towards streaming. There's a shared experience and reactions when you do something that's like a thriller like this.
The first thing is I make films for theaters. That's what I've been trying to do for 15 years as an independent filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's the best place in the world for you to watch a movie, anyone's movie. You know what I mean? If you make it for the big screen, I think that's what we love. Now, I'll tell you why I'm fighting so hard for theaters. As an independent filmmaker and a black filmmaker, I've been making these movies for $3, $4, $5 million for a long time, man. And what ultimately happens is you see the audience react when they go to the theaters. Well, it was only a couple years ago that black filmmakers were able to get their movies into theaters consistently. Mm-hmm. We were getting 1 to 2 films a year in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I'm fighting for theaters, man, because the one thing that I'm a little bit fearful of is if we get overwhelmed with everything going to streaming, when these theaters do come back, because they will, I want to make sure that we're still in line with the other films to be able to have our movies seen in these major metropolitan cities and theaters as well. I don't want to get lost in the shuffle where all of a sudden all the black films are now streaming. You know what I mean? So I'm fighting a little bit of a different fight.
Is there a buy one, get one tickets?
Yeah, man. Obviously, you know, I love my movies, man. So I'm trying to, I'm out here, man. I'm telling people, let me buy you a ticket. So if you go opening weekend and you like to take a friend, and if you buy one ticket, I'm buying the second ticket for you. And we're going to also be announcing some other programs where a few major cities, I'm going to be buying theaters. And yeah, the whole thing is just to kind of help, man. Like, this is a crazy time we're in right now. I mean, listen, it is breathtaking every morning you wake up to understand that we're in this global pandemic. And if there's a world, man, where you can go and get out of your house for 2 hours safely and go see a movie, then I want to be a part of that. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm pushing for Fatale. And obviously, I think Fatale is the perfect movie to go watch.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Best of luck with the release, and hope to see some more stuff coming.
Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate it. Be safe, too, man.
Now, if you want to hear the full interview, which is about 10 or 12 minutes, you can go to fatguysatthemovies.com, and it should have a link up there, and you can listen to the full interview and hear what he has to say. He talks a little bit more about making theaters safe and why he is interested in having this release in theaters. So there are some neat little incentives to go check out this movie. But it was great to have a chance to talk to him. I thought it was really neat to sort of pick his brain from the thriller side of it. You know, horror and thriller go hand in hand. And that certainly has a degree of crossover with this movie. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Creepshow Holiday Special and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Tenet. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and hit another horror movie item. You know I love horror movies. I apologize to people who can't stand them. I talk about them. I talk about them all the time. Even, you know, but they're relevant. This is relevant to the season. It comes out this week. It's on Shudder. It's absolutely worth it if you're a horror movie fan. So I say get Shudder. And one of the things they did as an original programming is they brought back the Creepshow concept. Now, A little bit of history about Creepshow. Creepshow was a movie that was made in 1982. Stephen King wrote the script and George Romero directed it. And it was designed to follow the old EC horror comics. You know, the Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, and The Haunt of Fear, which were these three horror comics in the pre-code eras. My dad would read them. I actually have some original from the 40s prints of those horror books. And they ended up getting banned. And there were a whole bunch of other comics that printed horror comics, like Atlas had a whole bunch of brands, and Atlas ended up becoming like Marvel. And they ended up going into superhero stuff because you can't do horror comics with the comic code when that came in the 50s. But my father raised me on these horror comics. I remember reading them as a kid, and then they had some reprints, and I read a bunch of the reprints, and they're gory and violent and horrible, but I loved them. And they did a Tales from the Crypt movie back in the 70s and a Vault of Horror movie, which were these Amicus films that were these portmanteau anthology movies. But George Romero and Stephen King joined forces in the early 80s to do an homage to those comic books in movie form, and it's great. It's one of my favorite anthology horror movies out there. They did a couple sequels. They did Creepshow 2 in the late 80s, and that was crap. There was like one episode that was okay. And then they did Creepshow 3 in the 2000s, and that thing was really bad. I remember reviewing that on DVD. The original Tales from the Crypt TV series on HBO was also a homage to that. Oh, and also Tales from the Dark Side was an old anthology TV series in the 80s that was on syndicated television. It was very low budget, but it was sort of what Creepshow kind of evolved into. And then Shudder decided to do their own version of Creepshow as a TV series. And I watched it. I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. They had short two or three different stories per episode. So they were short stories, and they're the horror comic type things, you know, gotcha endings, jump scares, ghouls, goblins, you know, some of the, you know, more traditional ideas. And, you know, it was low budget because they couldn't put a lot of money into some of the effects. So they'd go into the panels of a comic book to sort of tell those stories. And I thought that was a clever way of handling that diversion from the actual script. And so that was such a success. They're working on season two, but they did a Creepshow holiday special. And it stars Adam Pauly as a guy who worries he might be a werewolf and then finds himself in a support group for monstrous shapeshifters.
My name is Robert Weston, and I have been having a very hard time. And these blackouts.
Welcome to Shapeshifters Anonymous.
I'm at a support group for werewolves.
I'm a werecheetah. Battle stations.
Oh, they found us.
What?
The dreaded Santa Claus and his many evil helpers.
Kris Kringle and his magical helpers?
Don't fire until you see the whites of the beards.
What I love about Creepshow, the series, and they follow through with this special, is it has a love for the original content. It has a love for Creepshow. It still does it in the Creepshow feel. It has its foot in both comedy and horror, but it doesn't get overly slapsticky. And this is a one-shot episode. It's in 45 minutes or an hour. And you know, it's sort of clever. It has this cute little story, and it sets it up as a holiday special because they bring in Santa Claus as having originally been created not to give toys to children, but to kill all these shapeshifters. And so there's been this epic battle between Santa Claus and these shapeshifters, everything from werewolves to were-turtles and were-pigs, to fight this epic struggle over time and space. And it's a lot of fun. So if you like Creepshow, if you like the Creepshow TV series, and you like sort of how it has revived the fun of the original movie, you should enjoy this one. It's cute, it's clever, and it's a nice little lark. And it absolutely is a holiday movie, because if you remove the Santa Claus and Christmas elements out of it, you would not have a story. Anyways, I'm going to have to say that the Creepshow Holiday Special totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on the movie that was supposed to bring movies back to theaters, and that is Tenet. It is now available on demand. It's on DVD. It's on Blu-ray. It's on 4K. Christopher Nolan directs this spy thriller about a man trying to stop a catastrophic event from happening in the future.
do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
Nuclear holocaust?
No. Something worse.
You have to start looking at the world in a new way.
I can see why this was not the panacea that was going to bring people back to movies, because when you start off with this, even though it has some names in it, I mean, you've got Robert Pattinson as one of the characters in here. It's also not loaded with names either. It doesn't have Christian Bale, or it doesn't have Matthew McConaughey, who's been in these other movies that Tenet's done. It's got Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington. But aside from Black Klansman, not a whole lot of people will remember him. He's not really a household name yet. And I think he was hoping this would make him a household name. Now, I will say this, it's an interesting enough movie, but here's the point with Christopher Nolan films. He is out there acting like his movies are the most brilliant things that have ever been made, and they're not. His movies amount to a big Twilight Zone episode. I put him and M. Night Shyamalan in the same boat. They make movies that are big, loud, boisterous Twilight Zone episodes. The difference between the two is I think M. Night Shyamalan embraces that. And I think that it disgusts Christopher Nolan to be minimized that way, because his stuff is so brilliant. His stuff is not that smart. It's like, I remember when Inception came out 10 years ago and people were like, oh my God, it's so cerebral. I'm like, no, it's not. A dream within a dream within a dream. And then it ends with the biggest Twilight Zone ending in the world. It was all a dream, or was it? And people talk about, oh, Dark Knight Rises was so great. No, it ends with a ticking clock. It ends with these giant cliches. His movies are nothing but big, huge cliches with great cinematography and some pretty well-staged action sequences with some great special effects and some innovative filmmaking. But when it comes to stories, his stuff's kind of dumb. It just alternately yells and whispers all its dialogue at you and acts like it's smart, but it's really not. I mean, the big thing is, oh, don't tell anybody the twist. There's a thing that makes time run backwards in some ways. That's it. That's the big thing. What? How hard is that to understand? Now, they convoluted a bit in the movie, but I mean, overall, it's a fine movie. There's no real soul to it. And that's part of the problem that Christopher Nolan's had with his movies lately, especially stuff like, I would say that Dunkirk was like that. I certainly think for as much soul as he tried to put in Interstellar, he didn't put any in. And this movie is really him. I look at this more as him auditioning to do a Bond film, which I think would be a disaster. He would be terrible at directing a Bond film because he doesn't know how to handle characters and he thinks the archetypes are brilliant. So, I mean, I seem to be really down on the movie, but the movie's fine. It does have that annoyingly big, bombastic, booming soundtrack that drowns everything out, including the dialogue of your actors. And it's supposed to be this big spy thing, and they're out on public buses discussing the most secret things in the world, so that doesn't make sense. Plus, the fact is, a misogynistic filmmaker, I mean, all the women he puts in his movies are either prizes or property, or they're a MacGuffin that makes a character do something. There's really no independence of females in his cinema. But I mean, if you want to see an action movie, it's not bad. It's not a bad summer action movie. It's just not the beginning and end of filmmaking. And it was cool, and I'm sure it would have been really cool to see in IMAX, but there you go. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I think Tenet is a fine movie to watch. It'll waste 2.5 hours of your time, and it'll be perfectly fine. It's got some great technical stuff. And I mean, the Blu-ray comes with like a whole nother disc of special features that goes, it's like at an hour feature. It's sort of like what they did with Inception, where it was just basically an hour documentary broke up into sections. It's got some decent stuff on the Blu-ray, and I'd say it's worth getting. So ultimately, I'm going to say that Tenet kind of rocks, but don't go in thinking it's the beginning and the end of cinema.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Chick Fight, Infidel, The Dark and the Wicked, The Expanse Season 4, Tex Avery's Screwball Classics Volume 2, and Spirited Away and Castle in the Sky in Steelbook. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week on Christmas, I'll be talking about Wonder Woman 1984, News of the World, Promising Young Woman, Soul, and The Midnight Sky. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.